Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live, and here I am with Sophia Goles.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm really well, and it's great that you were able to join. We had a technical glitch, which we've solved. So welcome. Welcome to the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. I'm Mel Rosenberg, and I'm fortunate to be the host of the show. And I have incredible you as my guest today. So Sophia Goles, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Do you have your recent books handy?
I have them behind me. Yes,
okay,
I do.
Do you want to grab the most recent ones?
I will. Let me just untangle myself here. So sorry about that. Here we are.
Well done.
I have here A History of Toilet Paper and Other Potty Tools and Bug on the Rug.
Okay, and one is nonfiction and one is fiction?
Correct, and, yes.
And you said something that I found to be very interesting, that you write for the story.
Correct. Yes.
So tell us the story briefly of each of them, and then you'll tell us your life story.
Well, that's loaded.
Start with the toilet humor.
Start with the toilet paper. So A History of Toilet Paper and Other Potty Tools is a nonfiction. And it's the historical account of toilet paper, but it's a little bit beyond that. It's sort of a historical account of human hygiene and development and societal changes over thousands of years. It was kind of inspired by the pandemic. So go figure. There was a run on toilet paper, as we can all remember and attest to, I'm sure. And I walked into a store one day to get some toilet paper, and all the shelves were empty. And I turned around, but there were like tissues and other things there. And I just remember thinking to myself, you know, what, there's other things we can use. What did people do before toilet paper? It was like sort of an off the cuff thought. And then it just sort of kept with me. And then I started looking it up. I was like, what did people use before toilet paper? Now I'm curious. And the more that I read, the wackier and more hilarious and bizarre it was. And I just remember thinking, this is amazing. People are such a strange and odd bunch, but also very innovative, species. And I just kind of developed into this idea that I couldn't stop thinking about. So
we've been wiping for a long time, as you know, in your book.
For a long time with all sorts of things.
Thousands of years.
But it was interesting. It was so much fun to write. It was very fun to write. It was the first of my books that came out that was humor-based, still nonfiction, still lots of fun, but you know, it's funny because I originally came to writing thinking I would write, YA fantasy, epic fantasy novels, because it's what I love to read. And I didn't realize when I started writing that you kind of find your own voice and your own style. And, you know, it took me a long time to figure that out.
What I like about this book is the toxy style and the, your humor, your down to earth humor. Can you just show the viewing community here Mm-hmm. A couple of spreads. That's actually good for your book on toilet paper.
A couple of spreads here. Absolutely. So I was really excited that this was for my first bout in humor. But I'd been writing humor for a while.
As you should. You're very
funny.
Can
you see? Mm-hmm. Can you see things all right? Yeah. And I think that Chiana Tamoy, the illustrator, did an absolutely fabulous job. And we start at the right at the beginning, and it's sort of a timeline through human development. And then, you know, as humans and society evolve, so does, technology sort of along with it.
You wrote somewhere that we used rocks hundreds of thousands of years ago.
People used everything. I mean, anything.
But that has to be conjecture. We don't have fossils of the human species on rocks, do we?
I mean, the thing is there were accounts in, you know, ancient Rome of people using seashells, breaking, you know, ceramic potties, and then writing their enemy's name on them and using that. So, I mean, yes, people used everything that was handy. People used, and you have to remind yourself that, you know, way back when, and even now in some areas, wiping with something like cloth or paper was expensive and saved very much. It was as well a luxury. So, people had to get creative with it. But it's really cool. And it's just cool sort of to take the idea of toilet paper, which seems like something so simple. And this is sort of what I loved most about this book and this concept, is that it was a worldwide effort. You know, it was something that sort of sparked over here and came over here and then developed over here. And then this country had their own play on it. And then eventually it became what it is now. So it was sort of this, you know, global effort to get to where we are, which is toilet paper. And I just, yeah, it's great. It's an awesome global team effort. It's an account of innovation. And I love it. I'm very excited that it's out in the world now.
And I'm sure kids love it too. One of the funny things, you know, you talked about running to the store. When you have the runs, you need the toilet paper. And one of the ironies is that this book is published by Running Press Kids.
Yeah, I never put that together. It is true.
I wonder whether they
get appropriate.
Exactly. So let's segue now back to your childhood. You have a very interesting name, Sophia Goals.
Thank you.
Tell us about your background.
Let's see. I have all family names. I was named after my great grandmother, whose birthday I happened to be born on, and my mom did not know it at the time. So sort of serendipitous. So that's where the Sophia comes from. And then heritage wise, we're Finn and German. So we believe at one point in time it was probably von der Goltz, but upon immigration, you know, things get lost in translation. And so now we're just the Goltzes. But both my grandmother was a full-blooded German, and my grandfather on my mother's side. And then my grandmother on my father's side was full Finn. So very Scandinavian. Yeah.
That's really interesting. And where did you grow up?
And I grew up in Florida. So far, far away from either of those places. I grew up in the heat of North Central Florida in the swamplands. Grew up playing in the pine forests and the oak trees and riding horses out at the farm. Pretty laid back. My father was a professor at the University of Florida.
So, oh, what did he teach?
He was in the forestry department. He was a forest ecologist and conservationist, and he was for a long time a professor and also a working scientist. And then he eventually went to DC and he worked for the National Science Foundation. And that's where sort of my love of nature and being outside, you know, came from my parents and was something that was instilled from the beginning. Thus my first book, The Boy Who Grew a Forest. That was sort of a topic that I was fairly, you know, connected.
And that book did very well. It received awards. It was translated into other languages. Chapeau for that.
And you
talked about YA, young adults.
Yes.
And you write for amusing books for 5 and 6 year olds. So You know what my theory is?
That we I would there. Like to think that they're not just for 5 and 6 year olds. They can be for anybody.
Yes, but look, I write picture books too. the question is whether you write for your young Sophia, whether or not you wanted to write young adults or whatever, the fact that you're writing picture books, for me, says that you are connecting with your 5 or 6 year old self. I could be wrong. You can comment on that.
No, I just, absolutely. So a sweet spot in my childhood, you know, before the realities of life sort of took hold, is I just remember, you know, piling in my parents' family bed with both of my brothers. I was the middle child. And, you know, this is pre-internet, obviously, and everything else. And we would read. And those are just some of my favorite memories. I had an aunt, my Aunt Mary, who used to send my mom all the Caldecott winner books. And then my dad would read us things like, you know, Macbeth and, you know, other things, but it was just this magical time, you know, that, and then going to the weekly story time at the local library. The public library was always, they had a big fish pond, and the librarians were always so much fun. And I just, those memories call to me, and they made such a huge impact on me. They launched me to love books and writing for the rest of my life. And by my teenage years, that was a saving grace for me. My books were my escape and my best friend in many dark times in my life. So if I can ever trigger that in any other child out there, like, that is why I write. But yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. Yes. My inner voice is 7 and it will probably forever be. That's just how it is.
It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing as far as I'm concerned.
No, not at all. I started writing older, and then it just felt, you know, forced. And I just kept skewing younger and younger and younger until finally I was like, aha, this is where I meant to be.
And you're in a good place. So what did you study at college?
You know, I studied photography. Yeah, I do have a business degree. So I did eventually go back and go back to school and do business. But I went to art school. I left Florida in my late teens, moved out to California. I sort of spent a couple years, you know, waitressing at Moon Shadows. Shout out to Moon Shadows on the PCH. And trying to figure life out. And then I eventually went to Brooks. It was an institute of photography up in Santa Barbara. They have since, I believe, closed their doors, but it was a pretty pinnacle change for me when I decided to embrace storytelling, even though at that time I was telling stories through, you know, visuals. And from there, I jumped to Manhattan. I moved to New York and then pursued a career in the photography industry and did that for many years.
So you were a professional photographer.
I was not, actually. I ended up on the business side of photography, thus the business degree. So I was torn. I really liked the art and being able to express myself artistically, but I didn't want other people to tell me how to express myself artistically. I like to also call the shots and be in charge. So I realized for me, you know, being on the back end and being, you know, on the business side was where I wanted to be. I also, I love being visual, but it wasn't how I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to write. I always wanted to write. And I just never had the guts to fully pursue it. I thought I was terrible.
Was this something that happened abruptly? Because you've written that you wrote as a child nonstop.
I did, actually.
You pursued a career in photography and business. Did you have like an epiphany one day? Oh, I should be writing children's books.
No, I mean, yeah, I did. In fact, when I do school visits, I show them some of the first books. I used to, that's how I spent my free time, or making books. You know, I started taking online classes while I was working in New York, working still in the photo industry. And then I started at night taking online writing classes. I sort of got to this point where I realized that it was either going to be now or never. At least that's what I told myself, that, you know, I needed to do it, that I couldn't just talk about it and think about it and wish for it anymore, that I was going to have to make a change. And there was nobody else or nothing else that could do that. There was nobody who was going to, you know, see me walking down the street and be like, you know what, you should be a writer. Like that was not how, none of that was going to happen. I needed to be a writer and I needed to do that for myself.
But how did you know, most writers, myself included, didn't know that there's a way to become a children's writer.
It's I didn't know.
But you just said you took courses.
I took writing courses. Yes. No, I took writing courses for just general fiction writing. I didn't know because, again, at that time, I thought I was going to be writing stories for older readers. Mm-hmm. So that's what I started doing. And it was a couple of years later. What happened was, is my husband and I decided to expand a family. And upon doing so, we decided to leave New York. And I there was no way I could do, you know, a family in the city. So we moved back to Florida. We were fortunate at that time to be able to, he traveled for work and I could work remotely by then. So we moved back to Florida where my parents were, or my mom was based. And I had my first baby and I was a breastfeeding mom. And I went to a La Leche League meeting. So you asked, I am divulging. And there happened to be another author there, Karina Vacco. You guys can Google her, look her up. She still writes. She's brilliant. I absolutely adore her. And at that time, I had started blogging for a company called Mountain Buggy. So I guess I would have been what is now considered an influencer. At that time, we just wrote blogs and took pictures of our babies. So they would send me a stroller. I would take pictures. I was writing blogs. So I, to me, was considering myself, okay, I'm starting to write. I'm starting to get it out there. I went to one of these Leche League meetings, happened to strike up a conversation with Karina. She had an infant the same age as my infant. I did not know she was a writer. We organized a baby play date. We went out one day and we were talking about what we like to do. And I was like, oh, I'm a writer. And she's like, so am I. And as we're sitting there, Karina gets an email from an agent, a literary agent. And she's like, oh, hold on. It's my agent. We're talking, we're on submission. And like, my mind just sort of went, there's what? And so I was like, oh, okay, I'll wait. I'll just wait till you're done. And then she got off the phone and she came back and I was like, what is a literary agent? What do you mean you're on submission? What is this? And Karina was just a ray of sunshine. And she was so kind. She told me about the SCBWI, the Society of Book Writers and Illustrators. She told me about all the things. And I was like, a hungry sponge. I did not know that there were organizations that you could join. I did not know that there were other people like me out there. I did not know anything. And I realized in that moment how little I knew.
Okay.
And I went home, I think that day, and, you know, got onto the SCBWI's website and joined. I started looking at, critique groups. I didn't even have anything to critique. I think at that point in time, I reached out to the critique group and then I was like, oh, I can't yet. I don't know. And then it just sort of slowly began to develop from there. And that is how I learned that there are organizations to help, that you're not alone, that you don't have to write in a vacuum, that there are people like Karina who are willing to give you information. I didn't know that you could talk to another, that there were writers. They're among us. I had no idea. So at that point in time, the light bulb went off. Funny story, you know, it's been 13 years. Karina and I are still friends and she's still a brilliant, brilliant writer. So yeah.
Ask her whether she wants to be on the show. We'll be happy to have her and to corroborate this incredible story.
I will.
If you hadn't been breastfeeding moms, none of this might have happened.
Who knew? Serendipity, man. Serendipity. I'm a firm believer that the energy you put out there will come back. I'm sure, you know, people will roll their eyes at that. But, you know, no doors will open unless you put it yourself out there to open them. You know, if I hadn't said at that moment, oh, yeah, you know what? I'm a writer. Maybe that conversation never would have struck up. Who knows?
Incredible. But the other incredible thing is that you took the medicine. In other words, you said, oh, there is a path here. There's a journey. In order to go on this journey, you have to realize that you're starting somewhere at the beginning.
You know, I actually owe a lot of that to photography. I didn't think I could move to LA, and I did. There were many nights when I would be crying myself to sleep that I didn't think I would last, and I did. I didn't think I could ever work in the photo industry. And the next thing I knew, I was working with celebrities and, you know, producing huge shoots. I remember when I moved to New York, I had never done a winter, you know, having been a Florida kid and then going to California the first time. I think that winter also, I moved in like January, and that winter it was like 11 degrees every day. And I remember thinking, oh, it's, I didn't have a pair of boots. So I was like, it's wet outside because the snow's wet. So I went and I bought like a pair of rubber rain boots, and I almost had frostbite by the end
of
the day.
Okay, one second. Some of our viewers and listeners, when you said 11 degrees, you mean Fahrenheit.
Yes, Fahrenheit. Yes.
You had me for a moment because we do centigrade. No, that's okay. So 11 Fahrenheit is like minus a zillion in centigrade.
It's
so like,
very cold freezing. Is what it was.
And
cold,
New York,
cold enough that
wind.
You need more than thin rubber boots. You know, I didn't have any, you know, we didn't have money. I didn't have air conditioning. And once it became summer, I didn't know you're supposed to get window units for your AC. I used to go into work early, like 5 o'clock in the morning, just so I could sit for an hour before my shift started
you learned how to persevere.
I learned how to persevere, but I also learned that things can be done when people tell you they can't. Mm-hmm. And when you feel like it's impossible, mm-hmm. That isn't always the case.
Okay,
you know?
So, but still, I interview a lot of successful authors like yourself. I'm very lucky. And they are all 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 5,000 who got the book publishing deals with traditional publishers, as you did, and agents. It doesn't always happen.
No.
But how did it happen for you?
Well, you know, yes, you have to persevere, but it takes you can persevere as much as you want to, but if you're not putting in the grind, if you're not really giving yourself some lessons and work, like, I mean, you have to realize that it's an industry like any other. It is a job. Yes, it takes creativity, but you also have to learn the industry. And I spent over a decade doing that before I was published. So while I may have had my first book come out and then the next one and the next one, there were many years.
And two more on the way.
And two more, yeah, quite a few on the way. But there were many years before that of just daily grind. I look back on some of the rejection letters I got, the things that I was sending out at the time that I thought were stellar. And now I'm like, oh, goodness gracious. It takes a lot of work. I mean, it really just takes a lot of work, and you have to constantly be open to learning. You can persevere as much as you want to, but if you aren't learning along the way and taking feedback and working on yourself and your creativity, then that hard work, you know, or the perseverance will be for naught. So you have to really work in more ways than just one.
Okay. And how did the door open for you, Sophia?
Joining my critique groups was fantastic. I highly recommend that to everybody. And then I entered a contest. So I'm part of the Florida SCBWI, and I submitted my manuscript, my first book, The Boy Who Grew a Forest, to their Rising Kite contest. And I think, I think I have it up here. It placed third. Yes. So I placed third that year, which was shocking to me. I had never entered a writing contest. I had no idea what I was in for. I was shocked and amazed. And then at the time there was another writing group, that I entered their contest. They have since, dissolved, and, an organization, and it won in that contest as well. So I knew at that point in time, I had something going, and I decided to submit it out. I had an agent fairly quickly And then we decided to send it out. And
1 second, you had an agent just by writing to the slush pile, just by
querying agents. Now, I had been querying agents, though, for, like I said, many years prior.
Who hasn't?
It was a very long process.
But you
with
got
this
one.
Manuscript. I was able to say when I queried that this just won, you know, the third place in the Florida SCBWI contest, it just won first place in this contest, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I had a little bit more to work on at that point in time. A little more leverage. And I had an agent respond fairly quickly, I would say within a couple of weeks. And then soon after that, we were querying editors. And it was a bit of a roller coaster. We had that manuscript garnered quite a bit of interest. And then the first offer came in from Sleeping Bear Press. And it was still on sub with a couple different editors going to acquisitions here, going there. And then what happened was my dad unexpectedly died.
Oh,
in an accident. And
oh, sorry.
I thank you. My agent at the time, unbeknownst to me, followed up with editors using my dad's obituary and saying, oh, we didn't realize that Sophia had such a tie to the science community based on my father's work. And I did not know that they did this until they forwarded an editor's response with interest. And I saw in the email chain that they had sent my father's obituary. And I'm not going to try not to cry. I was devastated because the idea that I could potentially profit off of something like that was horrible. I wanted to walk away. At that point in time, I wanted to walk away. And I looked back and I realized that we had the offer from Sleeping Bear before any of that happened. And so to know that they wanted the book before that and that they were into it before that, I was like, that's the offer. That's what we're taking. And then I left my agent. So I signed the contract and left my agent. That was a big deal breaker for me. And then working with Sleeping Bear, they were such a dream. They made it all better. and it was especially, you know, hit home because this was a book that, you know, had the interest was sparked because of my dad, you know, and all of that. So it was a whole lot of emotions and feelings. That was almost going to be my only book. I didn't know how I was going to write again or pursue publishing again after that. But Sleeping Bear and working with Sarah Rocket, they were wonderful. It was a really dark time and for me, and they were such a beacon of light. And the book came out in a way that I never have envisioned it. You know, Kayla did such a phenomenal job with the illustrations. And then on top of that, to have it received the way that it was and still is, I can't even put into words. It means a lot. It really does. Yeah.
So, the book came out, it garnered awards and accolades. And then you succeeded in selling more and more books. Are you agented today?
I am agented again.
You have to be agented again. you're doing so well. Who's representing you now, Sophia?
So I stopped for a long, I did end up stopping for a while. And then I, about a, almost a year later, applied to the Rutgers, RUCCL conference, the writers conference. And I had applied a few years prior twice and been rejected, not accepted to the conference. So I applied this time and with my manuscript, Jack Horner Dinosaur Hunter, and was accepted. And that year, so that was, I think October was when the conference was. So it had been a year. And I was partnered with Liza Fleissig, from Liza Royce Agency. And she was my mentor at the conference, and she was so awesome. And she loved my book, and I showed her a couple other manuscripts, and she was great and excited about them. And I loved her energy. And I came home from that conference and I made a couple changes that she'd suggested. And then I properly queried her, and we were signed together like a month later. So, Yes. And I'm still with her today. So it's been a few years now.
That's wonderful.
She's been great. Yep. So she's represented me for all the books since.
That's terrific. So now we're going to segue from the serious, funny Sophia, but the serious one who writes biographies and history books, to the Sophia who writes a whimsical, hysterical, flippant, lovely picture book in rhyme.
Yes.
And I'm referring to Bug on the Rug.
Bug on the Rug.
Which is also from last year. And I'm sure you have that handy.
I do. So this is Bug on the Rug.
And this is the light side of Sophia.
This is the light side of Sophia. So funny enough.
Can you read a little bit of this book?
Sure.
Bug in the rug.
I can only read a part of it. But yes, Bug on the Rug. And Susan Battori did a fabulous job of illustrating. I've been very fortunate to work with some killer illustrators that I love. I'm very excited. So this is Pug. Pug on a rug, cozy and snug. He's a rug-loving pug when along comes Bug. Looking real smug. Bug on the rug, right next to Pug. Bug takes over the rug. Gobble, gobble. Glug, glug. And so then it kind of goes on from there. And Pug and Bug have this sort of
Pug hysterical... and Slug.
And Slug and a couple interesting characters pop up. And they sort of battle over this rug. And ultimately it's a story of mistakes and friendship. It's interesting because people have many different sides to them, myself included. So I think my very first manuscript that I wrote for children was a sweet rhyming bedtime story. So I have loved rhyme forever and ever. I used to write poetry many a year ago. And I love humor. It just so happened that my first books were a more serious nonfiction biographies. But I had been writing both,
Sophia, do you think that like becoming better known and famous with your early work enabled you to be, I don't know what the word is, flamboyant, frivolous, funny? Oh my goodness, alliterations here. Frivolous, so flamboyant, and fun.
I love it. Here's my thoughts on this. I know many very successful authors who work with agents or editors who sort of put them in a box. You know, this is what is successful. This is your brand. Now, having come from the photo industry and having a business degree, I completely understand branding. I do. And it's really easy. You look at somebody like Rick Riordan and you know what kind of books they're going to put out. You look at, you know, somebody else and you know what kind of books they're going to put out. That's just how it is. My husband, when I met him, was a professional photographer. And his portfolio always had to be very consistent, and he could only book jobs that looked visually like his portfolio. It's branding, it's marketing. I get it. It's not what I wanted to do or how I wanted to be. And I am very fortunate that my agent could look at my stories for what they were and not say to me, this is the type of author you are. This is what we're going to sell. She looked at stories and she was able to say, you know what, we could possibly go here with this one. We could possibly go here with that one. Let's just see. If you love it, then I will too. And I think that has been vital for me. And on top of that, you know, to then work with editors who are also willing to not put me in a box. You know, Sleeping Bear Press published The Boy Who Grew a Forest, and they could have said at that moment, that's all we want from Sophia are books like this. But they also published Bug on the Rug. So, I mean,
they're
two different books, but my editor, and I've worked with the same editor and the same team, and they've been fine. They're excited about it just as much as I am. So is it more difficult maybe to, you know, not fully build, you know, one type of foundation, possibly, but I think that you can do it as long as you're willing to, you know, find the people who are willing to do it with you.
You're doing it.
You know, the other thing is I was told early on that if you start with nonfiction, you'd be put into a nonfiction box. And I was very clear with my agent from the beginning, I am a fiction author also, and it is important to me that we do this. So again, you just have to be firm with what you want and consistent and find the people around you who are willing to work with you in that.
Okay, look, personally, like you're saying all the things that I believe in, because, and also you've written that it's all about the story at the end of the day. You look for the story, whether the story is true or made up, who cares if it's a good story?
100% yes. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to. You know, anybody who wants to write for picture books, middle grade, adult, YA, nonfiction, fiction, whatever, you have to have a good story. So it doesn't matter, you know, what you're writing. What matters is how you write it. And in my opinion.
Okay. And what are your best tips for aspiring authors?
Oh, gosh, there are so many. You know, I could say things like don't give up, but that's, you know, kind of a given. And it's hard not to sometimes. I would say one of my biggest tips and things that I've learned is to give yourself some grace. And it's actually okay to give up every now and then. You know, I've done that, taken a year off. You know, I've given myself time and taken the time. Sometimes that is exactly what is needed. It's okay to walk away. It really is. I think that if you're a writer, you're going to be a writer, whether you're writing right now or 5 years ago or 5 years from now. I think giving yourself grace is definitely one of my biggest tips. And the other one is just the constant learning. It is constant learning, constant feedback, always listening, just being open, always trying to better yourself with your craft, and also knowing that this is a business. Even though it's an art-based business, it is still a business. And, you know, you have to be business savvy in that sense as well.
Okay. So here's the thing that we always stress. You need the fortune of your friend in this breastfeeding group. But if you go to enough so-called breastfeeding groups and you say, I'm a writer, somebody will say, hey, I have a sister, I have a brother, show me your stuff, I'm an editor or whatever.
Somebody will say, I mean, if you look back at what I did, I was blogging for strollers. You know, and then I was writing this and I was writing that. It's a constant self-evolution and journey, and you never know what door will open. But again, if you don't try to open doors, then none of them will open. So you really do have to put yourself out there, to take yourself serious and to put yourself out there.
Sophia, we're near the end of our show, amazingly, because these 45 minutes just flew by. There's something that's bugged me since the beginning. And that is, you said that you're a control freak. and yet, I just had a book come out with the most marvelous illustrations. But you know that as writers with publishing houses, you don't pick the illustrations and you don't pick the illustrator. And no. You know, at some stages, surprise, surprise, here is your book. And the illustrations are just as much in the mix as the writing, probably 100%. More so.
Yes.
So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that giving your baby up for adoption before it's born?
You know, I think luck of the draw. I've been very fortunate. I do know some authors who absolutely hate the illustrations or what's gone on with the book. I do know personally. I've seen it and talked to them, and they're at that point in time, they're like, how am I going to promote this? This isn't even what I, you know, but they're at points, it's just, there's nothing you can do about it.
This is the first time I'm hearing this. This is really oy vey.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a thing that has happened. I've been really fortunate to work with, at presses that have allowed me to see sketches. Do I have, or even like, you know, given me a list of illustrators and been like, this is sort of what we're looking at, you know, do you have preferences? And, you know, of course I will always defer to them because it's up to them, but I am not afraid to vocalize my opinions. So I will say, you know, I'm not in love with that. But you know, I mean, I defer to you guys, but just so you know, it's on the record. Like I'm not. So, I mean, you know, again, if there's anything I've learned, it's that you got to speak up. You got to be, put yourself out there. What's the worst that's going to happen? They're going to do what they want anyway. You know, it's a business is a business, and I will treat it as such, but also, you know, I mean, I will be verbal about it. No, I've been very fortunate to work with, publishers who've allowed me to be part of that journey. At some point in time, you just have to give it up and allow that there's trust. It really helps. And I know, I'm sure everybody's heard this before, if you're writing, to have other projects in the works, because as somebody with OCD, if I have just one project to fixate on, I will fixate on it until my eyeballs fell out of my head. Like there's, so I have to be able to step away and fixate on something else. I have to have multiple.
This is also a good advice. Have a little OCD, but not too much.
Find balance with your OCD if you can. Very difficult. I know.
Among the O, the C, and the D. That's wonderful. And this has been like, usually I have to ask questions, but you're so you're able to speak so freely. I feel that I was just like sitting and enjoying this the whole time.
Yeah, this is great.
But so my last question, Sophia, will be, what didn't I ask you?
Oh goodness. What did
is there anything you're waiting for me to ask and I didn't ask?
I could tell you I've got a couple new projects coming out. So
sure.
Bug on the Rug. There you go. Bug on the Rug will have Bear at the Fair, which will come out in August of 2024. And then I have my next nonfiction, which is going to be a lyrical, serious book. So that's called Swish, The Wonders of the Wind. And yes. That will come out, I believe, in 2025.
With the Hachette Group.
No, Swish is going to be with Rycraft, which I'm very excited about. They've been putting out some really beautiful books. So I'm excited. Wonderful. About the illustrator for that one is, she's awesome. So I'm very excited for both of those books. And then I've got a few more books in the works so that I can't discuss yet, but
okay. But in a year or two, I'm going to want to interview you again.
In a year or two, I would love to have another conversation. Absolutely.
And it was really marvelous speaking to you. And I'm really delighted we solved all of our technical glitches at the beginning.
Yes, me too. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
And so this is Mel Rosenberg here. My name I do remember. I am the host. Now it gets complicated. The host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And I've been speaking to this wonderful author, Sophia Goles, about her marvelous career, and may you go on to greater successes. Oh, and I have like my epilogue question.
Oh, go for it.
Thank you. What is your best book, Sophia?
Oh, don't do that to me, Mel. Don't do that to me.
We can cut this out of the interview.
Kids ask me that in school visits. They'll ask me what my favorite book is. Oh, it's
no, so no. What is your best book, not your favorite?
Best.
You might say that your favorite is your first because it catapulted you to stardom. But
I'm going to say, what is your best? I have a book coming out that has not been announced. Contract signed. It's going to be with Sleeping Bear again. It's a fiction book. It's a story that has taken years to evolve, years. And I would love to talk to you about that one because, I mean, talk about a journey. I think that's probably the best so far.
Okay, yeah. So please give me a call when it's coming out.
I hope
I'll still be interviewing wonderful authors like you. And this was, I guess that you would say that my best book is the one that I'm writing now.
That's what everybody says. You know what? That's what authors, that's what authors are told they should say.
Really?
It's true. That's not always true. No, I think for me, it's this, it's not, and maybe other people won't think it's the best by any means, but for mm-hmm. me, it's the story that has taken the most blood, sweat, and tears to really turn, that made me really feel like a writer. You know, all of my books have made me feel like that. But this one has really, you know, I had to take it to Mordor and back. So it's been quite a journey.
So we'll look forward to hearing about that one. In the meantime, we've been talking to you about two of your very recent books, which are very different and each one is very lovable. We have The Bug on the Rug, which is Sleeping Bear, and we have
A History of Toilet Paper and Other Potty Tools, which is Running Press.
And to cite Madagascar, who wipes?
Thank you so much for having me, Mel. This is
wonderful, Sophia. It was great. I'm gonna cut this ending out. No, I'm not really. I just say that. Bye, dear. It was fun.
Bye.